Hi, my name's Sean Shaler. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. the objective geek of every social media platform in the history of social media, including Tumblr. I bet Chris is a micro-blog guy. He's got a Tumblr out there. Welcome to Avatar The Last Podcasters. We're going to do what, Chris, probably what everybody's been waiting their whole entire lives for us to do, which is explain to you all the reasons why we hate Korra. And we say that with as much like socio-political discretion as we need, because we don't hate Korra. But we're going to talk about all the reasons, the things that we don't like about Korra. And we gave it a clickbait title because that's the kind of show we are. You know us, Chris. We're all about those clicks.
You know, surprisingly, I'm even though this is a, to me, this is a dumb statement because I don't pit these characters against each, well, I did in a video, but I love both these characters. But I am wearing an angry shirt today. I know, right?
I would never do this thing that I did. What are you running for office, Chris? Jeez.
I've never said a single bad thing about Aang. I do love Aang. Makes it sound like I don't love Aang. I have way more Aang shirts than I do Korra shirts, but that's just because merchandise are sexist and they don't make as many Korra shirts. I could get this. I mean, that's not a sexism thing, honestly. It's just
merchandise could be sexist, but it also could just be a popularity deal. You know, but it could be sexist. That doesn't.
There's without a doubt some sexism with like merchandise. Like, I collect McFarlane toys, and McFarlane himself is, I think, really sets. He says some sexist things. It's like, oh no, I can't make girl toys because boys, you know, there's something about boys when they play with girl toys and stuff. I'm like, one thing, your toys are expensive. Little boys aren't playing with your toys. Grown men buy your toys. And honestly, grown men want you to make toys of girls, of the women.
It's a woke crowd for the most part.
Yeah, and also, like, they like those, like, been begging for, like, Zatanna figure. You know who that character is. Begging for, like, Black Canary figure. And I think he's finally getting around to doing Zatanna, even though he's about to lose his license. I mean, he makes great action figures.
It makes perfect sense, but this is the first time that I've understood that this is a person's last name, like McFarlane Toys. Not like a family name, but like a guy, like a singular guy. Based on that information, I possibly could have guessed that he was sexist in his actual. Oh, it's not the like McFarlane family toys. Like, not just Mr. McFarlane.
No, he's Tom McFarlane was a comic book writer/artist, really good artist. He created Spawn.
See, I didn't know it was that guy. Even I don't know anything about anybody, and even I know who Todd McFarlane is. I didn't know it was that guy.
Yeah. And then he got into creating toys somehow, like even those basketball or sports toys done by McFarlane.
But I've got a
same guy,
but for like a while too. Like, I think I've got a Bo Jackson White Sox, so like 95 ballpark.
So I remember a minute. I remember a very distinct memory of my mom taking me to some store, and she bought me a Shaquille O'Neal McFarlane figure, and this is like 95, because he was playing for Orlando Magic, and it came with a basketball goal, and I kind of didn't like it because it wasn't an action figure, like it wasn't posable and stuff, and so I just kept dunking with Shaq in the same stiff movement. But yeah,
I had a football player because it's just clearance, and I think my grandma got, and you know how grandmas are, it's like, oh, he likes football, get him football. But it was somebody I hated, but it was a really, really cool posed McFarlane. I want to say it was like Jeremy Shockey or somebody from the Giants. Somebody like that, obscure and who I did not enjoy. But it's really cool. It's like an end zone catch and where they have like the transparent piece that's like holding him up actually in the air. But it was big. Yeah. It was like, I don't know, it's probably a foot tall at its peak. It's a really cool piece. Like, man, Grandma, if this was any other player, any other player other than this guy right here. But hey, I learned something new. It never occurred to me that that's where McFarlane was from. Anyway, no, sexism merchandising does exist. Yeah, just compare the prices of a woman's razor to the price of the exact same razor for a man. It's weird. It's messed up.
I mean, part of it, I understand this whole supply and demand thing. Like, you can price stuff at what people are willing to pay.
That's the
capitalism.
That's the whole video game argument right now, too, right? Is like video games going up in price, and you almost can't take a side because everybody hates you. But it's like, Chris, I'm on the side of like, I don't care that they're more expensive because A, buy them used, and B, if you don't like it, like, I support your ability to stand up and say, I'm not going to buy that. And I'm going to say, great. Good for you.
I can be purely for things in a capitalist market and also think we go overboard in this country about capitalism.
Absolutely.
But for the most part, it's like, yeah, that's the price people are willing to pay. That's the price they'll set it at. I say this in a general sense.
More upset when, so like people get sort of have really hard opinions on like a video game as an example, prices going up. It's like, okay, I don't get as upset about it because that's video games. And if I can't do that, it's like, you know what? You can find cheap old video games or, you know, Steam. Like, you can find other inexpensive ways to have debt diversion. Like, can we talk about the price of, you know, like regular commodities that we need on a day to day basis? Yeah. Those things going up, that sucks.
Yeah.
That sucks. But anyway, that's my political diatribe for the day. Anyway, what are we talking about?
Why we hate Korra, but
things about Korra that are to our distaste.
I do want to give a shout out to Barry. He had us on his podcast, and he called me out, saying that I'm biased. And, you know, so this episode goes out to him. I had to make this.
I had to sit back
and begrudgingly make a list of things I hate about Korra. I got to one. There's one that I truly believe, and then the rest I'm like, I just gotta force it, or I gotta try really hard. Like, I gotta, all right, let me just add stuff that I know people hate and stuff, and then I'll probably try not to defend it too bad. But
gonna represent the common, you know, the common person.
Last week
Chris is out for trivia vengeance. This week he's out for harmless comment from a guest vengeance.
No, this is...
Oh man. Okay. Chris, get us started here. Get the ball rolling. What do you got?
All right.
Start with the ones you don't believe in as much.
Okay. I'll start with one that I don't believe in. Okay. That is one of the most common criticism of Korra, and I'm going to try not to defend her in this point, because this is why we hate Korra.
That's right. Stupid Korra.
It's funny. I'm even pretending to say bad things about her, and I can't even say. Okay. Might be showing my bias, and I hate Barry even, I don't love Barry, even more for calling
out. I hate Barry
the
same way I hate Korra. Which is only conjecturally for the sake of views. Barry, that's not even going to make that joke. Not even going to make that joke.
Don't you put that evil on me. Okay, first thing. Losing connection to the past lives. People talk about all the time. That is Korra's fault that she lost connection to the past lives, the past Avatar lives. And I would say this, I understand how hard that is as a fandom, because like the Avatars and the past lives, that's something very unique to like Avatar, and like, man, we want to know more about them and stuff, and it hurts in that moment, and it's supposed to hurt, right? Because stories are supposed to have consequences and stuff for your actions, and we all feel it, like that moment where Korra's reaching out and like Unavatu is just whipping them, which is, anyway, whipping the life out of out of Rava, and like with each splash, a pass like gets hit, and then like Aang gets hit, Roku gets hit, Kyoshi gets hit, and the last one is Wan, and then Rava gets killed. So lots of people blame Korra for that. Sure, she takes some blame. Again, I have to try not to defend her.
My distaste for this does probably match the average fans because it's such an important part. Yeah, like I gotta get consequences, but it's such an important part of the Avatar experience to me that I would. But to me, I blame it, Chris. I don't usually think about blaming Korra for this. I blame the second season and my general dislike of what the second season had to do to try to be interesting. But I probably align more to the con fan of like. That's such an important piece of Avatardom to me that does feel like it hurts too long. Like that's not what I want out of the show. But I blame the season. I don't blame Korra as much as the season overall.
Now it's time for me to be honest. I don't blame Korra at all. I mean, sure, she takes just some blame. I mean, but one thing I blame Unalaq.
Yeah, that's like, let's not blame the victim here. Let's blame the...
Yeah, exactly. Blame the person who did it. And also, I love this. I love challenging your characters. Also, I think her losing connection to the past lives... Dang, I'm defending it too hard. But it's a good story point of being like... Of being... about growth, about... learning from yourself and about a new age and things like that, how you got to look towards the future. I would also say this, is that to quote Yang Chen says in a quote, and I'm paraphrasing here, but she's talking to Kyoshi, where Kyoshi asks, like, how can I best guide the world or whatever. Yang Chen essentially says, you could spend your whole lifetime talking to all your past lives, and you will not know how to better guide the world than if you didn't. Essentially meaning like, listen, we're not that helpful, honestly. I mean, she's not saying that, but she's saying, I think she's saying like, it's not that big, it's not that important. Like you got to forge your own path, essentially.
Yeah, honestly, the word is like, you still have to be the one like pulling the trigger or making the decisions regardless of, it's not that the advice isn't good or is good or whatever, but you're still the one that's got to decide what
and
to
also affect. We've seen not great advice from past Avatars. None of them gave Aang necessarily great advice when Aang was trying to deal with the Fire Lord situation. So it's not like it is a mandatory thing to have as the Avatar. Past lives are great to have, but that's not what makes the Avatar the Avatar. Yeah, so that's my first thing.
The underlying theme of this entire episode, absolutely, I guarantee, will be that Chris will point out what's something that is, you know, maybe good narratively or good for like character growth, and I'm going to point out that it doesn't matter if I don't want to watch it, if my eyeballs don't like it, if my heart doesn't enjoy it, then I don't like. Then okay, that's a lesser experience. I don't want to enjoy as much as a different experience, and that's what this is. It takes a core piece away of the Avatar experience that I appreciated and I really liked, and now I'm upset that it's gone.
I think in order, and this sounds like cliche, but there, you know, there wouldn't be sunshine if it wasn't for rain, you know? You know, you gotta go through, you gotta experience bad stuff to really enjoy the triumphs. And the thing is, Avatar is honestly a little handicapped and that not a lot of people die in it. And so like, you gotta do something.
In the words of
this is a really easy way to kill
Brendan Fraser's, George of the Jungle. Nobody dies here. They just get bad boo-boos, which is a movie that doesn't get referenced enough.
Yeah.
It's a underappreciated family film. No, Chris, I'm going to side with the people but more in the sense of I'm blaming the way that the season had to develop and that I don't like the season. But Chris, I don't like that she comes out good at bending. And again, not necessarily for narrative reasons. I enjoyed far more the journey, just relatively speaking, of a Kiyoshi or an Aang. Like getting to see them develop those elements and being, that's just an element of those stories that I thoroughly enjoy. It's probably an archetype of story that I just happen to enjoy more. Like
I think we mentioned, I don't know if RPG is the type of word I'm looking for.
I think you're onto it. It's like an RPG. It's okay. Harry Potter in school learning the magic. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but no, I think your RPG is spot on. That's the part of the journey that I just enjoy the most. And so when she comes out like good at everything but airbending, and then airbending, of course, by Tenzin kind of has all the fun removed out. Like, yeah, that kind of limits a part of the experience that I want to enjoy more.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I get it.
It's tough though. You want it to be different, but like, man.
That is the thing, is that like, I was, you know, there was questions, there was some theories or leaks or whatever speculation about the new Avatar series and how it's I recently watched a video from Antoine Bandelay. And some people are like, this doesn't feel like Avatar. And to me, I'm like, well, they can't just keep regurgitating the same story. Like, they can't just keep having a person find out they're the Avatar, travel the world, and learn the four bending elements. Like, one thing, that would become a hard story to tell as creatives. It's like, hey, we told that story. Like, I get the fans want to see more of that story, but as a creative, it's like, do we want to keep telling this same aspect of this story with all of them? Like, maybe we should do something kind of different for each of ones. I understand that people like familiarity and stuff, but also I think I understand as a creative, it's like, nah, that's what we did before. Like, we want to do something different. But anyway,
sometimes to me, one of my mistakes as a viewer that I accept, but also like haven't mastered yet, is I will conflate progression with like power creep. I'll let those two things complete in my mind, because one of my least favorite things in all TV is like, you beat the big bad. Well, now there's this new big bad over this thing that you didn't know was important with this power that before was never described. But now all of a sudden, like, well, here's this deeper, darker secret that we had the whole time. You know what I'm but sometimes I will let progress feel like power creep when it's not. It's like, no, they have to expand. But I will say that one of my favorite parts of Korra is the Metal Clan episode. And I think a big part is like, yeah, they actually go and they're like kind of at a physics level when they're talking about bending the meteorite, because it's a lot of earth with a little metal mix. And it's like little things like that I'm like, I miss that a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting because, I mean, well, she's not, that's the only thing she sub-bends. Well, she's a healer too, but that's the only thing she learns how to sub-bend. Yeah, the only element she learns how to bend is air and metal. And then, the thing is, Korra, a lot of Korra is like, this sounds like I'm saying her again, but a lot of Korra is like teaching moments come from her being like, how do I get back to being me? Or how do I, like, a lot of her teaching moments come with like Katara and like, I'm paralyzed from the foot, from waist down. How do I get my strength back? How do I get walking again? It's funny, and it's like less of like how to bend this element, more of just like how to rebuild yourself from the ground up again, stuff like that. But we're not here to talk great about Korra.
Forget her.
Okay, the next couple things I am more so on. The Mako Korra relationship is fairly annoying.
I had this higher on my list, Chris, but I'm happy to address it now. But I'm just going to say that, like, all the early ships are just kind of all garbage with Korra. All of her early ships are garbage, and that's fine. The only good ship is the one that lasts and the one that matters. That's it. The rest are garbage. But I had this, like, higher up on my list of, like, annoying things.
Well, it's not even just the... Actually, I didn't mind the... I didn't... I didn't mind the Mako Asami relationship, but Korra, like, getting in there. And I get that she I like the moment where she expressed herself to Mako, where she's like, hey, Mako, like, I like you a lot, and I think we'd be good together. And that is perfectly fine. But then there's moments where she's like, oh, well, when you're with her, you're thinking about me. Or it's like, oh, I kissed you, even though you're dating Asami. And then season two is just like, Korra was like a terrible girlfriend in season two, with Mako's being a good boyfriend in season two. And it's like Korra taking crazy pills and stuff. Like, well, why won't you side with me on this? And Mako's like, I'm not siding with anyone. I mean, I do get some notice. Like, as a husband, you just side with your wife no matter what.
Yeah, unless, like, they have to be wrong. They have to be wrong to the degree that you're like, man, we have to find a learning opportunity here. We have to address this. But even then, in public, you still just like, oh, she's right. And then you wait to get back to the car. You're like, hey, listen, can we just we break this down?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I say that, but again, Mako was very rational. Yeah. I'll just end there.
I think it's a natural segue. So I have ships separated, but I think there's a natural segue into this next bit. This next bit, Chris, this is not a, well, Korra does this and Aang doesn't. This is not that. This is in the same way that when we accuse Aang of, Aang will do something stupid, we'll be like, hey, we have to remember that Aang is a kid, right? When Korra does something like angsty shitty, we have to remember that she's a teenager. But she does do just like sometimes there's behaviors in there that like mostly related to ships or maybe she reacts in a fashion that I consider like a little too big or a little excessive. And I have to remind myself, I was like, I think she's supposed to be a teenager. And that's pretty representative of teenage. But just like Aang being a child in Bato of the Water Tribe, I was like, I hate it. I know he's a child. I know he's misbehaving. He's being stupid, but it makes me mad. Same way with Korra. There's certain things that in certain times when she's acting her age, and I just happen to not like it whatsoever. But again, that can't be misinterpreted as like, well, Aang never did. Like, no, we said Aang did that stuff at his own age level several times.
I would also say when people are like, well, Korra's a teenager, well, Aang's kid, I do hold teenagers more accountable than kids. So it's like I'll cut Aang a little more credit or cut him a little more slack than I would Korra, because like, well, Korra, you're like, you're almost an adult. In some cases you might be an adult.
I mean, but I hold them more accountable, but I think she also behaves roughly slightly more accountable. You know what I mean? Like I think I'm keeping it relative to the age here. I hate when it happens on either side of the coin there.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think it probably shows up most often in the first two season ships nonsense.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or like if she's a little bit naive about certain things again in season two, and I'm like, you idiot! And then it's like, you know what? All right, she is a teenager, but still, you idiot.
Speaking of, it's not really related. Maybe it's related. And this is very specific. In season one, Tarlok like manipulates her, but I was into joining his task force. I don't give her any crap for that, because he, like, the way he manipulated her into it, she kind of couldn't back down from it, because he was like, he asked her, she said no, and Tenzin was surprised she said no, and then he threw a party for her, then put her in front of microphones and purposely had the press, like, planted press people to ask her hard-hitting questions about Amon that would either lead her to being weak or trying to act strong, and she none of those are great options, and so she went with try to act strong thing, and then she joined the task force. I don't mind that part, but the part that was like, yo, Korra, like, you wilding out. She was like, I challenge Amon to a duel. It's like, you need to think this through. That I do. I would give some type of like pass of teen angsty
reaction. Like, yeah, I'll take him now. It's okay. Jeez, are you sure?
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're gonna go to this location by yourself, no one else around, and challenge a person who you. It's not like you know his honor code or anything. He came with everybody. Like,
yeah, you just. And so that's a part where it's like, again, and I'm saying the teenage thing because that's why, but I'm not forgiving it because I do hate it. I'm like, I know that you are a teenager, but you're being stupid.
Yeah.
My thing.
But yeah, that's my third thing.
Chris, we've touched on all but one of my things already because there's just not a whole lot of things because she's a good character. But I want to save my thing for at least closer to the end. No, she's not. She's fine. Let me make up a thing. Spirit bending is stupid. Wait, that's just me not liking the second season again. Spirit, what kind of name is spirit? You can't bend spirits. They're independent creatures. Well, that's garbage.
That's what they do. They bend the spirit.
Well, I don't like it, and I don't like her for doing it, Chris. She's bad in spirit bending. I hate the concept of spirit bending. Pisses me off so much.
I think it's a good concept of injecting hatred into something and forcing it to change from its natural kind of position. I think there might be a little deeper storytelling there.
I just had, this is completely unrelated, but for some reason ESPN just refreshed on my other tab, and Jennifer Coolidge, probably her voice just... probably going to be recorded to the audience for like half a second. That's the Discover card commercial. Anyway, I closed the ESPN tab. Scared the crap out of me. I was like, who's talking? Oh, it's just Jennifer Coolidge. There's a notion there. There's like an underlying notion there that I'm okay with. But Chris, I would argue that spirit bending in general, you know, this fits into why we hate Korra. Why not? The notion of spirit bending in general feels... I've got this concept in my head since we argued about Superman with John. That feels more comic book-y to me, right? It feels just like a hair out of place of the realm of Avatar abilities that I'm comfortable with in a way that I'm going to say feels comic book-like.
Yeah, okay.
It's half a hair further out of my... bending comfort zone or my avatar powers comfort zone. Could probably say the same about energy bending, but we're not hating right now, Chris. We're hating Korra. Chi blocking like Amon makes way more sense to me than energy bending. Like, I'm willing to kind of brush past it, but like, I have like no issue with Amon.
See, Amon, the way Amon takes away bending makes way more sense to me than Aang taking away bending.
I agree entirely, but again, that's, you know, wrong episode.
Like,
wrong episode.
To the point where, like, it all computes. Like, Amon is a chi blocker. He knows how to heal, and you heal by looking at people's chi paths and stuff like that. Yeah, and if you know those two things,
those off.
And you're a bloodbender. It's like, this plus that equals being able to take away a person's bending. Like, all right, that math's out.
Whereas energy bending, I'd lump it into that same pile of like spirit bending. Of like, that's just a little more nebulous avatar-y powers that I'm like a hair less comfortable with. A hair. It's above a nitpick, but less than like a grievance. Yeah. Anyway, but no, that. I don't have any. Chris, what's your next? I don't know how many you got
left.
I have
two more. I have two more things.
Okay, you do this yours, one, and then I'll do my last one. Then you do your big one.
Okay, this one is very superficial. Is that I don't like her haircut. I know people love that.
Aang's better than Korra because Korra's ugly.
No, not at all. I just. Just that it looks. The thing is, it actually looks cool in a certain sense. It just doesn't look nearly as cool as her hair looked originally. And if I wait for her to grow it back out in some future comic. But the thing is, it's probably easier to animate.
Probably.
I think I might have read somewhere that was like, although I will say this, the panel, the scene where I want to say is where Korra reunites with Rava or finds Rava again in book four, where like the wind blows and like they animated the crap out of that little bob. Like I can't even describe. Some people probably know what I'm talking about. But yeah, the haircut is just, bring back the long hair. Bring back the three ponytails.
This isn't Korra character specific, but it feels like the right-ish place to put this. And I had never even considered this until Gio said it. But there's a little less like vibrance of scenery and world traveling gallivanting that happens in Korra than Aang. Huh. Right, it's less vibrant colors. There's more Republic City. There's more
season one and two,
especially season one and two. Yeah. Yeah, season three and four admittedly get better, and those admittedly look more interesting. That's not really a Korra character thing, I guess. Get out of Republic City more. I don't know what I'm supposed to tell her there, but yeah, Korra, explore more. Season three probably does the most world travel-y gallivanting.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Which, yeah, probably can correlation there to why I enjoy it. There's a lot of reasons why I enjoy season three so much. Anyway, Chris, this is my last thing, and this is my biggest thing, and it's sad that I have not yet determined the best way to word it, and that's what makes it sound stupid. But she just can be a not very charming, likable character sometimes. And I struggle with my protagonists. I typically do enjoy it when my protagonists are relatively relatable or relatively likable. It's just the type of story that I prefer. And I don't know how to change or affect that. Or if I'd even want to, it's probably just a part of who I am. And I still try to take another thing. But she's just, frankly, she's not as likable sometimes as I want her to be. That you could probably chalk some of that up to teenage angst. You could probably chalk some of that up to, as I mentioned, you don't get to go on the sort of the foundational bending journey with her. So maybe I don't feel like I have that rapport with her, right? Like I haven't gone on that part of the journey with her. You could probably a mishmash of those types of things. But there's just too often where watching whatever Korra decides to do or does makes me want to pull my hair out a little bit, even if it is, you know, good for story or good for character growth.
Yeah, okay. I don't have much all at that because I love Korra.
I mean, it's just a wildly subjective story difference. Nope. I would say that's probably representative of the masses of people who are kind of like staunchly like anti-Korra, or at least like, no, Avatar is so much better than Korra. I think that's probably at least a sliver of what they feel, or a slice or a representation of what they feel. Of it's just a little harder to root for sometimes, but you got to persevere. We're supposed to say, don't persevere. No, do persevere. You have to. You have to go on the whole trip with her to finish appreciating her, to grow and develop. But it takes longer, that's for sure. She doesn't come out of the gate riding penguins. And, you know, that's, my brain likes it when people come out of the gate riding penguins. That's good. So, no, I do think that's representative of a larger group out there that probably maybe feels that with greater magnitude.
Yeah. My top thing, and it's interesting because this got recently brought up on the Brave New Elements podcast, where Janet Varney, who loves the character, of course. Met Janet Varney. Shout out to Janet Varney.
She basically talked to us like we were her friends.
Yes, yeah, I consider her a friend. Friend of the show.
It sounds better than just your friend. Like, no, friend of the show. Oh, that's really, I get it. Yeah.
But they were reviewing, I forget which episode, I want to say, I forget which episode they were, but Janet Varney was like, I do not like her right now. Like, and it's just like, Cora's my least, in this moment, she's my least favorite character in the show with how she's acting right now. And a lot of people, I believe she was talking about how Cora treated Tenzin and her father in the beginning of book two, which that's what I'm talking about also. And also, like, fans were like, I saw some fans being like, geez, what? Like, she's avid Cora defenders, which I'm usually with y'all. They're like, man, we're so tired of Cora getting crappy from her voice actor. I'm like, she just has an opinion. Like, it's cool. Like, that's just opinion. Also, you know, I'm an avid Cora defender, but I do not defend Cora's attitude towards Tenzin and her father specifically in book two, where she's like, she kind of like dumps Tenzin. She's like, no, Tenzin, like, I have to go this way. Or she's like, no, dad, I got a break from you or something like that. Like, she's really rude and really dismissive of them. And to me, this is one thing that I think is bad writing, specifically between Tenzin and Cora, because of what Tenzin and Cora went through together in book one. I don't think Cora would act that way to him in book two. And I kind of blame, it's interesting, some fans, I think wrongfully so, think Mike and Brian aren't good writers, which I think is, I always think it's weird or kind of weird when fans down talk the creators of the show that they're fans of. But so Mike and Brian were the only writers for book one. It was just them two. And then book two, they brought in more writers because they knew they needed more help. I think this might be a thing of like bringing in more writers who maybe aren't as connected with the journey that the characters went on in the first season. Because it just seems like inconsistent writing to me, or bad writing, that Cora would treat Tenzin that way. Like, I understand her being like, to me, she's been like, Tenzin, like, thank you for everything you've done. Like, the argument is that she needs to go train with Unalaq to learn more about the spirits and how spirit bend, things like that, and to learn how to meditate in the spirit world, while Tenzin doesn't know how to do any of that stuff. And so she's right to go with Unalaq. Like, she has no reason to fear Unalaq or to question him. But the way she breaks up with Tenzin is so freaking cringe, and it's so annoying. Like, she should have been like, Tenzin, thank you for everything you've done to me, but like, I have to go this way. Like, I have to go learn how to do these things, and I'm sorry, but I have to go with them. Instead of being like, no, it's over, whatever she says to him. I can understand the way she has to her dad a little bit more, because we don't really know that backstory between her and her dad. We just see him in episode one. But it was still kind of rude. And then later on, I understand some of her actions towards her dad, because her dad kept her, didn't tell her everything, kept her hidden down in the South, even though that's not what Aang said. Even though everyone told her, I mean, they lied to her. They said, like, Aang was the one that said you should be kept in the South Pole. They lied to her about that. So I kind of get why she's mad about her dad and that in some of those cases, but still, some of her actions towards her dad seemed a little aggressive, especially her actions towards Tenzin were very annoying and out of character and bad writing, I think. So I'm very adamant about that.
I think that my brain probably kind of lumps that into, like, all right, but is that how, like, a teenager under a lot of stress would behave? And the answer is yeah. And so it's like, yeah. And I still hate it. But like, I'm kind of generally lumping it into that same category of, it's like, no, this is a person who's behaving like a person of their age, but we're expecting them to behave like the Avatar. And she is the Avatar, and she's well-trained, and she's had a lifetime of edification about such things. And she's still behaving like this. And that does make you just want to, like, yell at her for a second, screaming at the TV. But hey, it's evoking emotions, and that's powerful. I probably, and again, maybe the larger audience too, probably let those few moments, interpret too much of the character, like too much of my feelings towards the character over time, probably more than it deserves. I bet a lot of people do that too. I don't think I'm the only one. But it is in those moments that you just get like a really strong personal reaction of, oh my, Cora, what are you? I hate you right now. And then, yeah, unfortunately, that can probably stain your experience if you don't just like take a deep breath and move past that moment and like, all right, that was that just let it be where it is and move on and try to enjoy whatever comes next. But I can see, I mean, that feels valid. Chris, some things that we didn't address, any of the nonsense about the stronger avatar, which it's because as always, I maintain that, you know, depending on the environment, 9 times out of 10, and I've said this for like years now, 9 times out of 10, Aang's going to get away, and in Aang's mind, that's a victory. So it all depends on your context, your victory, conditions, whatever. He's going to get away. He's not going to beat her. He's not going to subdue and whatever her.
There is some fans who hate how much she loses. And like I mentioned to John in our Superman review, I don't want my character to win. I actually like my favorite characters to lose because they learn from that. That's the important part. It's not about just be a bad guy. It's about thriving through adversity and learning from it and becoming a better whole person. So I have no problem with how much Cora loses and fights. And also in the fights that she does lose, there's often good reasons like PTSD. some fans. Comments. Caitlin, shout out to Caitlin. Things she disliked. The breakup scene with Mako. Only I just love that scene. I don't like the breakup scene. I think it's cringe, but I do love how it ends with Lin being like, "You should have seen Air Temple Island when Tenzin broke up with me." I love that scene for that one little added moment to it. other than that, though, I don't like the scene. Then she says, just the first half of Book 2 in general with taking it out on Mako. Yeah, we mentioned that. Her romance, which was like a soap opera. Her personality in Books 1 through 2. Which I think I think was similar to what you had saying. A lot of people couldn't get over her personality in 1 through 2. Like, I can tell when people haven't watched the show. When I see comments just like, she's just so aggressive and so, I don't know, whatever they... other stuff, and I'm like, I don't think he watched the whole show.
You have to finish, because as we've discussed, 3 is so good, and I mean, we like 4 too, but like, you have to finish, but it, for me in particular, it's really hard to blame somebody if you got like halfway through 2 and you're just like, what is this? I would have a hard time blaming, but I would still encourage you, like, no, just persevere. This is the slightly unusual one. Not bad, just slightly unusual. Persevere.
Yeah.
You won't regret it if you're open-minded, as you persevere. You will regret it if you do it, like, begrudgingly. Then you'll regret it. But no, just keep watching.
Thing is, when I asked across different social medias and stuff, I didn't get much. I asked why people hate Cora and why people like Cora. I didn't get that much of why people hate Cora. So maybe the world's healing. Or maybe I just didn't reach that audience.
No, I'm going plenty with the first. I'm going with the first one. Makes me feel better. any other final notes, final thoughts? I think
Cora is a terrible character.
And I hate her. No, I think that most of mine are tied to. I guess I'm just going to call it like the fact that she's a young person who is behaving in ways that like my brain holds them to higher expectations, probably unfairly so. And that probably is like the root cause of a lot of the other things that I don't love.
Yes.
That's my self eval.
All right, this is over now. I love Cora. Cora's great.
No, you can't say that. Wait for the next episode.
I'm not waiting.
I'm going to cut you off right now. I'm going to hit the stop button. Mute Chris, because you got to come back next week to find out if Chris does love Cora. You have to come back next week and find out if he does and why. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. I'm Sean Shaler. This is Avatar The Last Podcasters. And I'll put all the stuff down in the description. And any form of positive interaction you can give to us, we love and appreciate it all. So thanks for that. And we'll see you next time.